Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. I'm Chris Solomon. Joining me today, tough act to follow with the month of podcasts that we just had, but he thinks he's up to the task. No Laying Up co-founder, Tron Carter. Tron, what's going on, man?
I was just trying not to disappoint people. This is gotta be a letdown for all the subscribers out there, but I'll do my best.
The new listeners need to learn very quickly that what the standard is going to be for this podcast, and not to expect what happened last month every single month. I just needed a break. I needed a break from interviewing top five players in the world. You know, it's a tough life. So. I got a lot of probably people that already closed their browsers after that one. But you just got back from a golf weekend fishing extravaganza in Jacksonville. Wanted to debrief a bit on that. Where were you? What were you up to? And how was the weekend?
It was awesome. Kind of my last hurrah. Wife's due in January. So headed down to Jacksonville, Neptune Beach to be specific, for DJ Pie's birthday. And his wife invited some of us down, and I ended up being the only one that could make it, which was actually worked out well, because it was we had a blast. We went played golf on Friday at Team Aquana, which is like an old Ross course down there. It was sweet. Played a little five, some little wolf, and then DJ posted that video of me on my swing. And I got more negative tweets about the length of my pants than like anything that's ever been posted about me. It was emasculating. And they're like, they're not even that short. I have so much pop in my swing that my pants started riding up on me a little bit. So, but needless to say, I may have to take those to the tailor, get a little bit of length let out of them. But yeah, and then surprise party for DJ, on Friday night at this local bar called Pete's. So I'm still kind of struggling with the lost voice. It was loud in there, smoky, and yeah, so just a bunch of people from the tour there. It was cool to hang out with some of them, and you know, it's cool to figure out that, or kind of remind yourself that these are all real people that work for the PGA Tour, and you know, it's like stuff, you know, kind of keeps things in perspective. So
what, when we just spend all our time criticizing people, and then you gotta,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like people have like, there's like real, you know, consequences, and there's like real decisions that are real things that go into these decisions, other than just, you know, hey, I want to watch every shot of Tigers for the whole season, you know what I mean, like just stuff like that. So but yeah, so it's me and Jacksonville's sweet. It kind of gets a bad rap in the national sense, but it's essentially like the land of low cost goods and services, and it's so chill. It's like the, you know, Jack's Beach, Neptune Beach. I think we ate Mexican restaurant or Mexican food 3 or 4 times, and it almost feels more like California than it does Florida, which is cool. But yeah, we woke up early on Saturday morning, went fishing, which we were kind of just like still half drunk and not expecting much, and started pulling out some big ass fish. And then played golf that afternoon, Saturday afternoon, with Luke Guthrie and his brother Sean Martin, DJ, and I. It's a little fivesome out at Dive Valley, out at the TPC, which was sweet.
Yeah, what's it like playing with, have you ever played with a professional golfer before?
I've played with a professional, but not somebody that, or, sorry, that's probably going to come out wrong. I played with Billy Andrade one time, a few holes with him, but like, I don't know. I mean,
have you played with a golfer that has pop, that contains pop?
Exactly. Not really. I mean, nobody with a PGA Tour card that has pop, or conditional status in the PGA Tour that has pop. So we went out there, and yeah, we were so sore from the day before and then from fishing, kind of hungover. And so got out there, and first hole was kind of short. Luke kind of had a sloppy par on the first hole. Missed a short putt on the second hole for par, and then he rattled off like 6 birdies in a row, and like didn't even acknowledge it until like after the 6th one. And DJ was like, "Oh man, like that was 6 birdies in a row for you, wasn't it?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, I guess you're right." Like he didn't even really realize it.
That's some standards you're holding him to, though. Sloppy par. I don't think I've ever heard the term sloppy par before.
Well, I mean, he was in the greenside bunker in 2. Par 5 and relatively straightforward bunker shot, and then blew the bunker shot by a few feet. So I'm sure if he played that 8 out of 10 times, he would make a par or make a birdie. So.
Okay, you made it. I thought it was like he lagged a 20-footer close and tapped in for par and made a sloppy par.
But the way he was playing, it was essentially a glorified par 4. So,
well, it's got to be nice to go from snow in Boston down to you'll be singing Jacksonville's praises if you're going from the Northeast.
No, I got back and I told my wife, I was like, "Hey, we're probably gonna need to move down there." she was actually really cool about it, and it was funny. I sent her a picture of one of the fish we caught. No words or anything, and she's from Naples, Florida, so she's done a lot of fishing, and she just writes back. She's like, "That's a big red." And I was like, I would have never known in a million years that what kind of fish it was if somebody sent me the picture. And she knew right off and then was like, "What were you using? All this stuff." Like, she knows 10 times more about fishing than I do. So I have a feeling she'd be right at home if we moved down there.
Yeah, you're not cut out for the cold. I mean, yeah, you went to school in Ohio and you survived the winters there, but you're a Southern boy. You're not prepared for all that winter up there.
Yeah, we got spoiled up here last year, too, so I don't think it's going to be quite as kind the winter up here in Boston as last year. So, battening down the hatches for sure.
Well, you got to play mostly golf this weekend, fishing, drinking. Did you get to watch much of the return of the cat?
Saw a little. Didn't get to see any of it on Thursday, which was driving me nuts. Like, I was on calls all day and then kind of tied up with work stuff, and I mean, Twitter was just melting down, right?
Oh, it was crazy. I was instigating a lot of it, overreacting to a lot of it. So
it was like the Charlie Steiner Y2K.
Exactly what it was.
Like, I got on there and people were just losing it. So didn't get to see too much of it. And then Friday flew out like relatively late in the day. So didn't get to see a whole lot of it there either. But caught a little bit on the weekend. Man, Big Cat was sweating profusely.
He was into it, man. You have alternative theories to this, or?
I do. I don't think, I mean, unless we want to get a cease and desist from Steiny and the gang. I'm gonna bite my tongue on that one.
We'll let the people come to their own conclusions.
Conjecture.
I mean, it was pretty crazy. I had tempered expectations. I think my initial reaction to it was ecstatic about what we saw, 24 birdies, but overall, I would say very sloppy. As I'm like a couple of days removed from it now, I'm actually a bit more worried about it as I think back on it. And I've done probably an unhealthy amount of thinking about it, but I think this is kind of one of those, I want to get your feedback on it before we get into it, like one of these occasions where it's kind of like the perfect time to talk Tiger. I mean, I know it gets beaten to the ground, but I usually get very frustrated when events only focus on him when there's another event going on. I thought the Hero World Challenge was a perfect excuse to just focus on Tiger for an entire weekend.
Yeah, it's like a novelty.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's just kind of a little gimmick tournament, but...
Yeah, and you know, like I was listening to Shane and Chipnuck on Shane's pod earlier, and, you know, I mean, Chipnuck said it perfectly. He was like, "Yeah, it's an easy course, you know, relatively flat spots around the greens and stuff, you know." So it was like, but he was talking about how there were a few times where Tiger straight up just wouldn't even play it at the hole on a chip, you know, just like leaving himself with a 10 or 12 footer, and he was fine with that. But I got excited on, I think Sunday we flipped it on, and Tiger like almost hold a chip, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, that was cool because I was expecting him to just be hitting Texas wedge from off every green, you know, trying to keep the ball on the ground with the chipping yips. So I was more encouraged with that and the fact that he was working the ball both ways.
But I think people, I just don't remember this right, but the end of 2015, my recollection is that he was pretty much over the chipping yips. He had one really bad chip Sunday afternoon of the Wyndham. But, I mean, the chip yips, that was back in February, and that was Phoenix, and he just absolutely embarrassed himself. He went out to the Masters and finished tied for 17th this is 2015, and the chipping was not a problem there. I don't remember it persisting throughout the summer, and I just remember that one chip at Wyndham. I was just kind of surprised to see people focus that much on the chipping. Am I misremembering any of that?
It just never goes away. You know, it's always simmering right under the surface.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So, but yeah, I mean, I was pleased. His swing looked like it possessed more pop than I anticipated.
Yeah.
Because there was like that New York Times video that it looked great, and then somebody else posted something, and it looked super hesitant, especially towards the follow through. So it looked a lot better than I was expecting it to.
Yeah, man, he had some recoils going through the hitting zone on some of those. I mean, overall, I was, and I know Andy Johnson, Fried Egg, was pointing out as well that he did have a two-way miss going. A lot of left misses. He was trying to hit a draw off a lot of tee boxes, but that's the more I reflect on it, I start to be not as encouraged by the performance. And I know I'm kind of nitpicking it, because if you told me at the beginning of the week he was going to make 24 birdies, I'd have been ecstatic. But he's had some trouble and some pretty wide fairways down there. He missed a lot of them, and he was playing from the waist area more times than I can count. I don't have the numbers in front of me. And while you were encouraged by some of the chips you saw, overall, he hit some – he didn't skull or blade any chips. He chunked one that he was chipping from the green, kind of a weird shot. So he didn't really – disastrous ones, but – yeah, don't ask about that one. But he hit a ton of really bad chips too. I mean, not just like – not embarrassing chunks, like I said, but just where he's, you know, rolling it 20 feet past the flag and really not getting close.
Isn't that the thing? Like, he may not have the chipping if he's figured out how to fix them, but his ceiling as far as chipping goes is like, there's so much anxiety there, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I was so encouraged by the way he hit his irons. He stung his irons. He knew exactly what he was doing with those. He was confident with those. He did hit a bunch of really, really, really good drives, but for the most part, it was kind of it was comical. He would do a premature tee grab incredibly quick after a good drive, and then you could tell if he was watching one that it was going to clearly miss the fairway, and there were plenty of those. So I don't know. I'm encouraged. It was a good start, but I think he's not going to be successful on a regular PGA Tour course unless he gets his driver much more straightened out.
What was the deal? Was it just straight unforced errors like the last few holes every day, or just fatigue, or what? What do you think?
He had mentioned that he was just not used to not playing in a cart, and it was rust, and it's kind of a generic term for it, but it was, you never felt safe. You never felt like he was in the house. Like, you know what I mean? Like he'd run off five birdies in six holes or whatever, and you didn't feel. Friday was the only round that he really finished it off well. The rest of them, he just kind of felt like he was clinging on for dear life, and that's supposedly a pretty tough finish. It's really hard to get an understanding for that golf course watching on TV, but it was a tough finish, but I don't know. I don't put a ton of weight in, you know, making six double bogeys or whatever it was. I didn't care that much about his score, but it's more just the sloppiness and inaccuracy off the tee. I think that could be his only downfall.
So what it sounds like he needs to get your boy Casey Martin on the phone, try to figure out how to line up a cart.
If they'll do it for anybody, it'll be Tiger. But
right?
I couldn't help notice, by the way, that he was playing a TaylorMade driver, a Bridgestone ball, and a Scotty Cameron putter. I just I don't know. Found that curious.
Vindication.
As I take a little sip from my tea here, and despite that getting dismissed on some other...
Is that the last time that you ever weighed into equipment Twitter? That is...
I declared that it was, and then I couldn't help it when Rory straight up tells me about a... equipment change that he's making. That information, I was incredibly confident was true, considering it came from him. But man, I had very good source on who provided me the Tiger Club information. But holy shit, I'm never doing that again. Never without being 100%
sure.
Golf
architecture Twitter is kind of like beyond the pale, but golf equipment Twitter, like. You know, I know we've joked about it with J-Wall before. It's like, man, you can have that. Like, that is – those people are nuts.
It's – I just don't understand – like, unless you – especially these people that don't work for one of these companies, why they, like, affiliate themselves with them so strongly. Like, there was, like, a 30-page message thread on Golf WRX about just that tweet about, you know, the Bridgestone ball and all that. And everyone's like, oh, he would never play a TaylorMade driver. And the Nike people getting, like, legitimately offended by it. And I was just so confused. I did not know that world existed until this.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, to be honest.
Yeah, and I didn't feel safe until he finally teed off. I was wrong. I did say that I had heard that it was Mizuno irons. That was off, but supposedly
yeah, but
that's...
then you got all the truthers out there who are like, yeah, they're just Miura irons with a Nike stamp on them. You know what I mean?
I know. That's the part I want no part of. But hey, if I hear something, I'm not going to just say something completely random that I don't have good information on in the future. But I'm going to try to avoid the equipment game from here on out. But... Hideki Matsuyama went nuts again, fourth win in five starts. Does he excite you?
No, like not at all. I mean, his caddy did. Did you see his caddy?
Yeah.
Like, she knew or what?
They mentioned something about it. I think it's another Japanese player's caddy or girlfriend or something, and she just was available for the week or something. I don't know. I don't know the whole full story behind it.
That was great. I was like, she was sweet. But yeah, I mean, I don't get worked up over him. Like Sean Martin, I mean, he was half-masked all weekend down in Jack's because, you know, like we were out at the bar on Friday and he was already beside himself about Hideki playing well. I don't think it helps that when he wins like that, you know, just going away from the field. Although I guess it got close towards the end.
Well, yeah, we can't.
But yeah, I mean, his tempo is great, but it's amazing. Like, if his putting stats were even remotely average, how dominant he would be.
Scary. It's kind of scary how well he hits the ball, but yeah. I don't know if anything's majorly changed in his putting for this fourth win in five starts. And I hate
to four and five stars.
Well, I got to put an asterisk on it because a couple of those are Japanese tour or Asian tour wins that aren't, I'm sure, the best fields. And he finished second. He finished second in the tournament that he didn't win to JT in Malaysia. And I don't remember what the fourth win of that is. So you know, you can't pick apart four win and five starts. But it's not four win. It's not four PGA Tour wins and five starts. But. I don't think anything necessarily has changed in his putting. I think this is probably the worst time of year to get super hot. So I don't know if that really changes the way how I feel about him going forward. But I was listening to Swantech's podcast with Steve Sands. I just found it interesting that one of his handlers or his interpreter was saying that he may start doing interviews in English starting in the first quarter of 2017. That's obviously not as interesting of a topic as his golf game, but I just found that really interesting. I think that'll be really cool. I think that takes a lot of guts and courage to a language that's definitely not your first, that you don't speak well, to start having confidence to be able to speak it to the media. I think that could hopefully. I hope that kind of changes our access to him or in our understanding of it. And I don't know. Do you find any significance in that?
Yeah, I mean, shit. Angel Cabrera hasn't. Like spoken English, like he speaks great English, and he refuses to do interviews in English. Which I mean, that may just be a savvy move on his part, but yeah, I mean that's probably a window into his psyche and just getting more comfortable over here. I'm also curious. Like I just looked up his recent results, and the fact that he didn't play in the Dunlop Phoenix over in Japan seems kind of strange.
Why did was there a reason?
Like that's the biggest tournament in Japan, to my knowledge.
What so. was he playing something else that week or?
Well, he played the CIMB and then the HSBC, China, and then he played this Mitsui Sumitomo Visa Taiheo Masters.
Of course, everyone, you didn't watch that?
Yeah, but he didn't play but he didn't play the week between. So he didn't play week 45. So maybe it was just the scheduling thing. But it just seems strange that he would skip that one, because that seems to be the biggest, you know, biggest tournament in Japan. Why is there not a WGC in Japan? Like, it seems like they've always tried to, you know, they got one in Malaysia, one in China, and like, why isn't there regularly a big tournament in Japan that's sanctioned?
I would understand that more probably than China, but I don't know how that sponsor stuff works.
Just too expensive?
I have no idea what that. Well, so this is kind of one of those things that I would say on here. Man, I'd love to see that. It'd be cool to have an event in Japan, and there's zero chance I would watch it. So like, I feel
really?
Like,
oh man, I'd watch that. Like,
how?
Doing it in that course in Lost in Translation. Like Bill Murray's playing with like Mount Fuji in the background.
Isn't it in the middle of the night, like in the U.S. though? Like, I don't know.
Well,
if
it'd be like prime time, wouldn't it? You team off right. In the morning, and you know.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I don't know. It's just this. I mean, I don't watch the one in China. That's like a kind of a silly season WGC or off season WGC, and I rarely watch that one. That's because Bubba and Poulter win those. That's also contributes to.
And that course drives me nuts. And the atmosphere there is just so stale.
Yeah, it's pretty poor. Do you think the Hero World Challenge should give out world ranking points?
Man, I've gotten some crazy hot DMs about this week, and I'm just like, whatever, dude. I don't think they should give like points to whoever finishes in last place. Like, I have a real problem with that. So, you know, if you finished in last place in a WGC or the Hero World Challenge with 18 dudes in it, you didn't beat a single one of them.
Yeah.
Like for instance, what was it? A few weeks ago, Jimmy Walker finished like 50 shots off the lead in one of the WGCs, the no-cut WGCs, and he gets world ranking points for that. Because of strength of field and all that. And it's like, you didn't beat a single person in the field. So, yeah, I mean, I have a problem with that. But at the end of the day, it's kind of like when you have, you know, that many top 15 or top 20 players gathered somewhere in the world, you know, shouldn't it be valid or shouldn't it be applicable to kind of the rankings?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So that I agree with you 100% there, because I didn't understand the takes that people saying that they first of all, having Tiger in the event ranked 898th or whatever just kind of throws things for a loop, because like, yeah, whatever, he's going to move up 150 spots because just by finishing. Which, I mean, you know, that makes tons of headlines and everyone wants to say this is what's wrong with the depth. First of all, since when have you ever cared about somebody moving up from 900th in the world to 650th in 1 week? You'd only care because it's Tiger. I'm just so sick of people taking like the official world golf rankings on a week-to-week basis, like coming up with like a really weak narrative like that. Like pointing out this one little crazy thing that can happen and acting like that is the flaw in the system, or saying like this is why it's flawed. It's like, the system's not meant to be like a perfect fluctuation week to week, and it's not like a power rankings. It's not every week. You can win an event like Hideki did and not move in the rankings. That doesn't mean anything. There's points based on it, and there is a formula behind it. It's not like somebody's sitting back there saying, oh, so I'm going to move this guy up 250 spots this week.
I agree. I think that's kind of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Where, you know, but I do think my problem with the world golf ranking is – for whatever reason, I think it puts too much emphasis on some of these international events. Not enough emphasis on recent trends, too.
Okay. I think it's too weighted towards old events, is what you're saying.
Yeah. It should be more progressively weighted towards what have you done for me lately.
Yeah, and if you want to argue this flaw in it, and I don't disagree with it, yet at the same time, I understand why it's structured this way. It's tough to get into the top 50. Once you're there, pretty easy to stay there. So it's kind of a protect your stars system. Is that the most fair to everyone past 50? I would definitely say not. But if you're the ones deciding, you know, who gets in these, you know, official... First of all, there's only like... How many events a year? 8 that or so that, you know, are where your world golf ranking actually matters. Am I right in saying that? in the WGCs, we don't really care about who actually gets into those unless it's Tiger, so throw that out. The rankings don't matter that much, not nearly as much as people think they do, I would say, unless you're the thing that really matters is getting in the top 50 to get in the Masters. So yeah, once you're in that top 50, it's going to protect you pretty well. But at the same time, like that's kind of the system they have in place. They want to protect their top players. If you do get hurt for and you miss 3 months, like Jim Furyk or something, you don't fall completely out of it and have to use medical exemptions or all that kind of thing. So I don't know. It's not perfect, but I just, and another thing about this time of year, this, and I should have pulled up the piece, and maybe I'll find it and put it in the show notes, but Jake Nicklaus wrote a thing just about how the Euro Tour this time of year is like the 5 o'clock free crack giveaway when it comes to world ranking points.
Crazy.
And always this time of year, there's guys that climb up the rankings that sneak into that top 50, get in the Masters field at the end of the year. It's like, I don't mind having one PGA Tour event. It's not even a sanctioned PGA Tour event, but one event that mostly benefits the American players and the PGA Tour players that is just like a free world ranking point giveaway to end the season, because the Euro Tour just, they give out world ranking points. Like it's like a Nino, like turkey on Thanksgiving, Nino Brown, baby.
All right.
Go.
So, do you know who the 34th ranked player in the world is?
Is it like Bernd Wiesberger?
Yuta Ikeda.
Okay.
From Japan.
Yeah.
All right. He's won like, he's just dominated the Japan Tour.
Okay.
But he finished 33rd at the PGA this year. Looks like he finished like tied for 72nd at the Open Championship, MC'd at the U.S. Open. Basically, hasn't done anything in any of the tournaments that he's played outside of Japan. And he is ranked ahead of like Ryan Moore, Scott Piercy, Jim Furyk, Zach Johnson, who won a major last year. Like that's just crazy to me.
And that's where the non-PGA Tour tours, like Euro Tour, Asian Tour, they give out too many points for a win. And I know I spend a lot of time on this podcast saying how hard winning is and how whatever it should be rewarded. But I'm sorry, like beating like some like the Madeira Islands Open or whatever it is that doesn't get a top 250 player in the world, and they give out, you know, more world ranking points for a win there than like a fourth place finish on the PGA Tour, mm-hmm. where you're losing out to Sergio Garcia and Justin Rose and on some of the top players in the world. It just doesn't, it's too much weight. I know that the ranking points are structured, that it's based on strength of field, is how many points the winner gets, how many points the second place guy gets, blah, blah, blah. But you still get so many points for beating, I mean, relatively, not a lot of good golfers. Whereas you can be in an event in the U.S., finish 10th, you beat a ton of really good players, and that's a better performance than whatever you did, the guy did that won the crappy Euro Tour event. That's just what gets me upset. Here's the leading candidate, before we get too nerdy on these numbers, but do you know what Alex Noren is ranked in the world right now?
He should be ranked. Like, in my mind, Alex Noren's a top 20 player. Because he's just absolutely eviscerated everybody the last 3 or 4 months.
He's the 9th ranked player in the world.
Like, see, that I'm cool with that.
You are?
He's probably the hottest player, yeah.
So he's won 4 times, okay? So I'm sliding him by saying this. He won, and the events he won were not weak Euro wins. Maybe he's not the best example. He won the Scottish Open.
I'm barking up the wrong tree on him, just because he's... I actually enjoy watching him, and he's Swedish, and
well,
so I kind of have a soft spot for my Swedes.
My point is, since 2013, he's played the weekend in 2 majors.
Yeah, but both of those majors it was the last 2 majors, right?
It was. He's T46 and T49, but I mean, come on, like, 9th-ranked player in the world? Like, I know not everyone's going to come play the PGA Tour, and not everyone can play a world schedule for all the reasons, but man, you got to see you beat some, like, talent.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to look at it, too. Like, he won the Scottish Open. That was a pretty big-time field there in the lead-up to the Open Championship. I won't say the British champ, British Open on here. And then he won the Omega European Masters, which is like the flag, one of the flagship events on the Euro Tour.
Can you just let me have this? Can you let me have this one time?
No, I knew you were going to bring him up somehow. I knew he was coming, and I was like,
I'm going to be a hypocrite because I don't like when people just like take one guy and then compare him to the next guy and as part of the flaw in the rankings. But I'm going to name off several names that he's ranked ahead, and this is why I have a problem with it. He's ranked ahead of Bubba, Ricky, Danny Willett, Paul Casey, Sergio, Justin Rose, Brandon Grace, Brooks Koepka, Russell Knox, Phil Mickelson, and your boy Matt Kuchar. Like that just, I know you don't have a problem with number 20 there, but I don't know. That just doesn't sit right with me.
But like Bubba hasn't really...
I know.
He hasn't done anything since like last, you know, like at Doral last year.
Yeah, I know. I know. All right, just let me. I told you, just let me have one thing. Just let me have it once.
I will say, man, I'm really, really pleased. Kuchar down at 20th. He's been. Yeah, he needs to be 20th or below. But yeah, I mean, he went from 22nd to 20th after the Hero for finishing. Tied for third.
Yeah.
Like, tied for third at the Heroes, like a backdoor top 10.
It is kind of a backdoor. He bronze medaled the Hero World Challenge.
Yeah.
If anyone ever gets bored, I really challenge you to do this. Go back to the very first No Laying Up podcast. This was recorded in April of 2014 at the RBC Heritage. And the four of us, the only time the four of us have ever all been together at one time. I don't know if you ever recognize that, but.
That's kind of insane.
Isn't it? And we recorded this podcast. We had no idea what we were doing, first of all. There's not even any intro music. Todd's eating chips the entire time, and we're just drinking beer, and just all we do is argue about Kuchar for like 20 minutes. It's actually a hilarious re-listen. I had a lot of work to do this weekend. I have a real job, and actually had to just needed some like background noise. I turned that on, and I was just cracking up laughing. So in April of 2014, you predicted that you wanted Horschel to be on the Ryder Cup team. That was before his crazy run. And you predicted that Patrick Reed was going to ball out on that team. Like, it was just like side notes in the show. Like, no one even paid attention to when you said it. You had two pretty insane predictions.
I mean, shit, man. We need to expense something. Like, put together, like, meet in the middle. Like, meet in Bermuda or something. And, like, go play golf there. Like, all four of us and just expense it.
Where do you think I live? Where? How's Bermuda in the middle? How's that a meet in the middle?
Kind of, right? I mean, I don't know.
We can meet in Iceland. That might be in the middle.
Yeah, although not this time of year. Here, no. You can go play some ice golf or something.
Yeah, not this time of year. So. What do you say we get into some Twitter questions? We got a lot of them, and they're pretty good ones.
Let's do it.
The Fried Egg, our partner in our newsletter, which, by the way, we've tweeted about several times, but you should sign up for our newsletter. It is it's a very good way to stay plugged into some things that are going on if you're not paying attention to golf for a week, or you may have missed some kind of story. So Andy does a really good job with that. But
and it alleviates anxiety about missing good content. Like, it kind of allowed me to tune out on certain stuff on Twitter and focus in on other stuff, because I don't have to worry about, oh, I'm going to miss so-and-so writing something. Like, it just kind of aggregates all of it there and then links you to it.
Yep. So, and we give away a dozen Bridgestone balls every week because of it. So go ahead and sign up for it. The Fried Egg wants to know the five golf courses, public or private, you want to check out in 2017. Is this like a dream wish list? Like, you
can... yeah. So, all right. So in 2017?
Yeah. Let's. I think for the sake of the question, you keep it to realistic options and leave off Pine Valley.
Let's see. So I'll say one around here. Been lucky this year to play some really cool courses up here in Boston, but one that I'm really, really looking forward to playing next year is Old Sandwich.
Okay.
Awesome things. Everybody up here says that's pretty much the best one of them all, even the country club included. So look forward to playing that one. I'm heading down to Florida. My wife's pregnant, and I work remotely, so I can kind of work from anywhere. So when she's on maternity leave, we're actually going to live down in Florida with her family for a month or two, and then go to Atlanta for like the month of April. But I really want to go to Colusa Pines down there. It's private, so have to figure out a connect there. And then really want to check out Streamsong Black at the end of the year too. Probably be back down there at some point, end of 2017.
I like how you just float that out on the podcast. Like, oh, I need to need to find a connect down there. So.
So actually, Stream Song Black's not open up till like fall next year, but would really love to get out there. Gil Hans, so hot right now. and then that's three. There's another one up here in Western Mass that I really, really want to play. It's a nine hole called Whittonsville. It's a Donald Ross. It's supposed to be like the one of the best nine hole courses in the world. Kind of out in, you know, like you wouldn't expect there to be an awesome course out there. And then otherwise, I'm trying to think, I guess I'll keep it up here to, or actually, you know what? So Neil and I are going, we're going to this thing called the Fifth Major. It's out in Nebraska.
John Deere?
At Dismal River. Yeah. It's like, that was my first thought too. was the John Deere, but it's out in Nebraska. It's flying to Denver. And then, this thing's at Dismal River, but, I think we're for sure playing Ballyneal. Really looking forward to that, but trying to, Sand Hills is kind of at the top of the list there. So that's probably the number one course I want to play in 2017.
There you go. I thought you were going to leave it open for a fifth to just have somebody. That would have been the true way to plug it. Be like, I'm open for a fifth, and just take the best offer. Take the best response you get.
Yeah, I mean, it's been awesome. People have invited us out to play a few places out there. Ballyneal, Prairie Club, a couple around Denver. So excited.
So you can make all those trips all over the country, and you can't come meet me in Ireland for a weekend of golf, is what you're trying to tell me. So.
Well, that one's in June, and I got an airfare for about 10,000 delta miles on that one, too. So
you don't have to explain yourself to me, but no, I'm
How
aiming.
About you play any golf down in Africa?
No, I might play some down in Cape Town, but I'm not bringing any equipment with me, so I'd have to get like the full hookup of everything there. But I haven't done much asking down there. But I'm going to be going for Northern Ireland in May, and then Scotland in June. I think for. Basically, I'd like to hit County Down, Port Rush, and Port Stewart in May. I got a lot of work to get that figured out. And then heading over to Scotland. I'm not sure what the itinerary is for Scotland. I'm not really heading that up. And then I may head in July to the Irish Open, hopefully.
Awesome.
I'd like to cover that. And I will be moving home shortly after that, so kind of a last hurrah of getting some things checked off my list here. But
Irish Open, is that it? Are they still moving that one around?
It's at Port Stewart this year.
Port Stewart, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Moved back to July this year. I hope I can get that worked out, because that would be pretty awesome.
Have you had any inkling to, like, take any mainland golf or mainland Europe golf trips? Or is it kind of
I haven't.
Mostly just.
Just because. I mean, for multiple reasons. I have a friend in Ireland that, you know, once I'm on the ground, we all play together, and I have a place to stay typically and whatnot. That makes going to Ireland so much easier. And I don't really have golf friends over here. My only other golf trip I've done here has been with people from the U.S. that came and met me in Scotland. So, I haven't really had much desire. I did go down to the Algarve in Portugal, and there's a ton of courses down there. There's advertisements for it everywhere. And I was with a non-golf group, and it was driving me pretty nuts. But I would love to, if somebody ever showed the interest in it, I'd love to make a trip down. I'd love to play Valderrama. And I don't know, there's a ton of continental good golf in Europe. I just have not explored that really at all. Andrew Hudson wants to know, he wants you to tell us, who is the absolute best golfer on tour, putting aside all off-course antics? Basically, he wants you to exclude JJ Day. He put in parentheses JJ Day, so you're not allowed to have your own personal feelings towards anyone or personal preferences. Who's the best player on tour?
Best player on tour? That's such an open-ended question. Though.
But you can define it however you want to.
I kind of define it as, I'd say, best player for me is like who's got the best like sixth gear, like who has that sixth gear that nobody else has, you know. So like, you know, I would say like DJ, J-Day, Speed, they all have like a fifth gear, but honestly, when Rory starts bucking his head,
yes,
you can cancel Christmas.
Yes!
I mean,
you made Porter's day.
It. And actually, I'll put another one up there, who I think, you know, when he's firing all cylinders, is Adam Scott.
I haven't heard that name in a while, I feel like.
Yeah, it's which kinda... is just, and that's more just ball striking, I guess, but like when he's on, it's like, shit, he's throwing darts.
Yeah.
Firing lasers.
I guess I kind of dislike the whole whose A game is best arguments, because, like, I don't know, I feel like we can see guys go, and even Matsuyama has this crazy A game when he puts it all together, and I don't know, it feels like such a silly comparison to try to make, like, figure out who can go the absolute lowest. But I was interested because I asked Speed this question, and I just kind of wanted to hear his thoughts, and this first person he mentioned as well was Rory. And I just found that interesting. To me, it's hard to forget what Day has done over the last 2 years, and if he can stay healthy, I don't think we've really seen anyone go on the type of run that he's been on for that sustained period of time. So that's what makes me want to say Day, but I don't think he's going to be able to stay healthy enough to give us like sustained, like, progress in his game and whatnot. But
health is a skill, man.
It is.
Health is a skill.
It matters.
So
it matters.
Yeah, I mean, I would put DJ and J-Day in like the same category. Although DJ's wedge game's gotten a lot better, but I don't know. I feel like they just kind of bludgeon the ball to death. There's not a whole, you know, there's not that much artistry.
Yeah, that's very true.
I would say DJ's game's probably a lot more artistic than J-Day's. It's like just brute force. But, you know, and I'd put Stenson in that camp too. It's just like, just monopoly on swing speed, you know.
This is not a Twitter question, but have you made picks or do you have predictions for the majors next year?
Yeah, so one that I feel really, really strongly about. I think Rory's going to win the first two.
Ooh, I like that.
I think he's definitely winning at Erin Hills.
Okay.
It's going to remind him of, like, you know, it may, you know, depending on the weather, but just it looks like the layout is almost like kind of Irelandy.
Yeah. See, it screams DJ to me. Because,
yeah.
I mean, Chuck Howell made me feel a lot better about it, too, in saying it's long and it's just going to emphasize guys that can pound it down the middle of the fairway. But, yeah, I mean, if Rory has a good week driving the ball, that obviously is going to suit him as much as it will DJ.
Yeah. But, I could see.
You also, you just Rory. you know that Rory listens to this podcast, too. That's why you're saying.
No, you know what? Like, I don't know if he was listening. I would probably pick otherwise. I think he's going to win 3 out of 4 next year.
Quail Hollow.
Yeah, I think Spieth is going to win at Birkdale.
Wow. Okay. Man, you are showing a lot of bias towards recent podcast guests on this show. But I was curious, what did you...
And then I also think Sergio is going to win the Masters. I think Sergio and Rory are going to tie.
They're going to share the green jacket, one arm in each sleeve. Yeah. Okay.
Because I always pick Sergio every year.
you file your bet when you file your taxes on Sergio. I don't know if critical is the right word. I think the Twitter consensus or people that follow you will understand that you have a bit of, I don't know what the right word is, judgment on Spieth. You're not fully on the Spieth bandwagon. I was curious if after listening to the podcast you thought of him any differently, or I guess any chance you wanted to take to explain your Spieth relationship.
You know what? I try to challenge him. It's kind of like that movie Whiplash, where, you know, J.K. Scott is like, you know, he's a, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's like the drumming instructor at this like best music school in the world. And, you know, I'm kind of Jordan's instructor in Real Life Matters, and I'm just trying to challenge him, trying to make him better, tough love kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, any criticism I have, like, for instance, I was going to get on you, man. You said Brand Steward on the phone with him.
Yeah.
Like, with a straight face, you called him the Brand Steward. Like, you've gone in, you know, 3 or 4 years to being just another guy to a global brand steward, and that's kind of why I've given him such a hard time, because I feel like he is pretty corporate in that regard, or he's let the C-suite kind of kind of take over. So that was very, I come in with a jaundiced point of view about it. And then, so for him to come on the podcast, that was really freaking cool.
Yeah.
And then to kind of tell stories and lay it all out there and all that, that was fantastic. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot more there than meets the eye, but most of the stuff that's bugged me over the last year is just the slow play.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just kind of come off as whiny and it seems like he's pretty self-aware in that regard. But I felt like after the, I can't remember which of it, like it was kind of before the PGA. It just seemed like he was kind of feeling sorry for himself with the media, and it seems like he's kind of come full circle on that. And, you know, so, but yeah, so that's kind of a roundabout way of saying I like him a lot, and you know, I think it was just kind of growing pains here over the last year.
So. Yeah, no, that's fair. I wanted to give you the chance to explain it because I think people just think you hate him, which I definitely don't think is the case. And you even told me one time you basically invented that guy. Like you were all over him coming up out of college. So it's definitely not. It's out of love that I think you give your criticism, and it is. I guess I don't notice it maybe as much as you do. And to be honest, that question I asked him just about being the brand steward was influenced heavily by your kind of take on that. Cause I mean, these guys, I don't really listen to anything those guys say that's really corporate-y or really,
yeah,
I just the whole money side of the game that I don't care that much about. I can see how it bothers some people and whatnot, but I think, yeah, it's a phase that you got to kind of go through. I mean, Rory kind of went through something similar when he changed equipment, took a ton of money to do that. Now I feel like he is this guy that just doesn't care about it. Not doesn't care about anything, but just like will say whatever now. He's willing to be open.
He's his own man, kind of.
Yeah. And
Jordan, well, I mean, I can't imagine being that young, having that much money, and especially now versus 10 or 15, 20 years ago. You know, I mean, it's a different world. So, you know, I'm sure I'd be a total freaking head case. But yeah, I mean, as long as he's gotten the slow play thing under control, that was really my primary gripe.
Yep.
And the belts, his belt game is still abysmal. So, which I gotta give Luke Guthrie props for that. I gotta figure out what kind of belt he was wearing this past weekend because it was the best belt I've ever seen. It was awesome.
You got some criticism on your belt this weekend.
I did. Oh, I did. It wasn't a white belt, people.
You got to be so careful what you put on the what gets put on the internet. Like you said, you got pants about comments about the length of your pants and your belt. I mean, there's videos or pictures that I will be like revising, like zooming in on every corner of the picture to make sure there's not something hidden that somebody's going to make fun of me for. So you got to be careful, man.
And really, yeah, and just putting my swing out there. I mean, I know I come over the top. You know what I mean? It's like trying people. I don't get out to play as much as I would like. You know, I need to get lessons up here in Boston. But yeah, it's crazy. Like just, I mean, which more power to them. I mean, I let people have it.
So, yeah, we can take it. Come on,
give it to me. No problems there.
My favorite was when Hashtag and I were playing golf at the British Open last year. We were just messing around. It was raining and just doing like just tour sauce videos. And I hit this tee shot, and this comment has stuck with me. Like, it still stings me. I posted a video of my swing, and the guy said, "I've never seen somebody with so little talent." And, like, it stuck with me. He got me good. So now I don't post videos of my swing. But,
it goes back to, so, like, going down and hanging with those guys that work for the tour, we played in a three-cup tournament. When I was down there for the players this year, out at like Jack's Beach, it was like just the most hilarious little muni. But I picked like a 3-wood, and I was playing with DJ's club, so I picked like a 3-wood, a 7-iron, like a gap wedge or a sand wedge or something. And I get up on the first tee. I hadn't played in I don't know, probably 5 or 6 weeks. I get up on the first tee, and like DJ. I think some of these guys had kind of asked TJ, all right, like, is this guy any good? And he's like, yeah, whatever. I've never played with him, but he's like a 6 or 7. And my swing was just like a mess at this point. I whiffed the first 2 balls I swung at.
What?
Yeah, we're like the first group off. I whiffed. Like, I'd never, ever even remotely come close to whiffing before. And I'm I was trying to sing with my hands real low. It was literally the most horrifying experience of my life. And
I'm choking over here. I think this is unbelievable.
Yeah, it was honestly, I almost shit myself. I was so embarrassed. And then you know, it got better as the round went along, to the point, but like all weekend this weekend, I was literally telling DJ, because we played with this guy Tom from the tour, who's a little bit older and he like kind of handles some of the TV stuff, and like I was just like, dude, DJ, like you have to tell him like I can actually play. DJ beat me by one on Friday, and then I beat him on Saturday, and like I was like, you have to tell him that I can play. I still hang on to that. I'm still.
You waited till the 50-minute mark to tell this story, not when I asked about your golf this weekend. You didn't leave
it's
like the
PTSD,
podcast.
PTSD, man.
Still just sitting back there. Yeah, you're gonna have a long. It's gonna be a long time before you shake that one off, DJ. For as many people as you think DJ has told, he's told 20 times that. Just to warn you, he didn't tell our group though. He didn't. I didn't know this. I feel like that was like an emergency. Should have been shouted out as soon as this happened.
But I mean, it was literally like the guy. It was like Bob Barker in Happy Gilmore. He was like, "This guy sucks." I went over to DJ and gave him that look. I was just demoralized, man. So
okay, let's get to a few more questions because we got a lot. Ian McLaughlin wants to know your top five players who lack pop can't play.
Ooh, like top five, like they lack the most pop, or top five guys who lack pop, like top five guys who are good despite lacking pop.
The question is his top five players who LPCP. So you can take that however you want.
Kuchar's probably number one,
of course.
Luke Donald's number two.
By the way, in that podcast I mentioned earlier, the very first No Laying Up podcast, Trotton drops a lax pop can't play in the first 10 seconds of the very first podcast. So, Luke Donald's two. That's essentially the RBC heritage is LPCP, is what you're saying.
Yeah, a little bit.
Luke Donald and Matt Kuchar.
I'm gonna say the Molinari brothers.
Just, wow.
Just like looped in together.
Okay.
I can't stand their games. Four would be Brendan Steele.
Okay.
That guy can't play for me, like at all.
Okay.
And then five, great guy, relatively new follower of mine, played with him a couple times growing up in Atlanta, but Roberto Castro.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. I mean, he's 70th in the world right now, and I have no idea how. But then again, like if you're gonna ask us to name 10 guys or 15 guys who grew up in or around Georgia and the Southeast who are gonna be on the tour from, you know, within 1 year of like the class of 2004 from high school, he would have been near the bottom of the list, and yet he's always just been a total stud. So. I mean, I guess that's almost kind of a badge of honor for him.
A badge of honor.
Completely maximized his talent.
To make your top five is a badge of honor. So
yeah,
I'm sure he wears that with pride. Kevin at Just Four Sports account wants to know who stole your cookies as a kid that left you so angry?
I saw that one. I'm really not angry.
That's what I want. I feel like you need to come on the podcast more often just so people know that in real life you're not like you sound on Twitter.
Yeah. I'm not angry. It's just that's kind of my outlet is Twitter.
Yeah, this guy just tells it like it is.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but people like strong takes. You know, the one guy going back to the LPCP thing, the one guy that I'm a little bit concerned about because I'm a big fan, but he shows LPCP tendencies on the course is Fitzpatrick.
Okay,
Matthew Fitzpatrick.
He was LPCP at the Ryder Cup.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Then he won. In Dubai.
Yeah.
So.
Does he have plans for the tour? Does he have plans for the PGA Tour?
I think he's like. I want to say he's going to be one of those guys that plays both.
Do you think the Euro Tour is going to change their qualifying?
Because, I mean, yeah, he played pretty much all the Florida events. Played Honda, Doral, Arnold Palmer, Match Play. Masters, Heritage, Players, all in a row.
Wow.
And then he played Canadian Open, PGA. looks like the dude just really likes playing in national opens, which I think is sweet too. Which I think more guys should do. Like I think the Mexican Open should be a big event. The
Mexican
Open. National Open, like there should be extra weight to that. I think that's been lost in the mix along the way here.
All right.
Sorry, that was just a side tangent.
Do you think the Euro Tour changes their Ryder Cup qualifying?
They're going to have to, especially if Rahm's
playing. I know. Rahm is going to be the reason why that changes, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
Did you have any questions? I can keep going, but did you have any that you wanted to get to on this list?
Let's see. I think we got a question from Robbie Vogel, who actually writes for the site, just about golf, like versus like here versus like here in Boston versus Atlanta, and kind of like what I've found, what are like the big differences. Biggest thing would be it's much more walking culture, which is really refreshing. And Solly, going back to the push cart, because I know you're talking about this on one of your Ireland or Scotland, I think it was Ireland podcast. I think that there's a time and a place for the push cart.
Yep.
I think I just used it in the wrong course. Like there's a super, like it's really bad to use it on a hilly course.
Yes, it would be. Yes.
It's not so much logistics.
It's not necessary if you're going out to play 18 holes, is my point. So backing up to my argument on the push cart, in case you didn't hear it, when I used one in Ireland for my dad and I's 7-day, 8-round golf trip, where you're walking 18, 36 holes a day, that wears on you. And I've got two bad shoulders. I dislocated my shoulder, been rehabbing it. Lifting a golf bag over my shoulder 50 to 100 times a day is not necessarily good for it. So it does serve a purpose if you're going to be walking a ton. If you're going out to play 18 holes of golf, I can carry my bag. That's no problem at all. But if you're going for a long weekend of golf or a week of golf, I'm signing off on the push cart. It's fine. It's more manly than it is taking a actual golf cart, is my whole point. Like you can't say like I don't know. It's such a pride thing that people will refuse to use a push cart. And I know I lost some fans by saying this on the Ireland. I'm probably losing even more saying it now. But I'm in on push carts.
Yeah, part of the push cart mafia.
Push cart mafia.
Let's see here. Another one. Who do you think has more PGA Tour W's left in the tank? Big Cat or Lefty?
That's Brad Bachman. Just asked that.
And then question, more majors. I'm on record as saying I think Big Cat wins two more majors.
Two more majors. That one's that's strong for that's strong for me. I you have been adamant. I think even as of maybe even like a year ago, saying that you think Big Cat comes back and wins. Two more majors, that seems strong to me. I'm not going to disagree with you. I say he wins again. I don't think it's going to be another major, though.
I just look at – I was telling Swantek this. Like, you just look at the British or – you know, I mean, the guy – I just go back to Augusta a few years ago.
Yeah.
When he, like, pulled a top five on his ass.
He does a lot of that at Augusta.
Yeah, but, like, he hadn't played – you know what I mean? Like, that was out of nowhere. One thing I wanted to ask you about was – the Zurich Classic, when you're talking to Chucky Triple Sticks about – he was so – like he was – I was shocked to hear how bearish he was on that, the new format.
He thought of an angle that I hadn't thought of, you know, and I think he's looking at it from a overall bird's eye view of the PGA Tour. And he's probably got definitely has a lot better understanding than I do of like the tour's relationship with sponsors and how they come up with formats and whatnot. So it was a good point he made on how I don't know what he thinks that I think he sees it as kind of a slippery slope in that, you know, a sponsor can say, hey, you let Zurich do this crazy format. Why won't you let us do this format? And I don't know who comes up with these, you know, who determines the format and whatnot. For me, I'm ecstatic to see them kind of invoking this European Tour half-bake idea thing, which we need to do like a whole podcast on just half-bake ideas.
Yes.
We really do.
Like the fact that they're doing this format and not having one day as a two-man scramble.
Oh, I know.
Is a disgrace.
I know.
Like that needs to be at the top of the list as far as priorities go.
And so my idea was a two-man scramble, and every hole you don't birdie, you have to each have to remove a club from your bag.
That's awesome.
Right? I mean, because you should birdie almost every hole. I mean, you should make 13 birdies.
Like go out and have a 3-club tournament one day.
That's getting a little crazy for professional golfers. A 3-club tournament. It might end up being a 3-club tournament by the end of the round. Yeah, if you run out of clubs, you're done. You're disqualified from the event. So
we got a question. Who's winning the Puerto Rico Open and the John Deere Classic in 2017?
We talked about the majors already, didn't we?
My man, real Andy Stern.
I don't even know who plays these events anymore. I would say Spieth wins the JD. He'll be back at the JD this year, probably, right?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. Hopefully Stricker. Hopefully, I want to see like a Spieth Stricker battle at the end. I think that would be riveting.
Is Furyk going to be the captain for the 18 Ryder Cup team?
God, you love the Ryder Cup. It's insane how much you love the Ryder Cup.
I do. I really
do. It's like unhealthy. Yeah, I mean, I can't see any reason why he wouldn't be. And then, yeah, really all I care about is, like, I think somebody was saying how – I think it was Chucky 666 saying how the – you know, he saw Poulter as the Euro captain in New York. I think Poulter needs to wait his turn. I think they need to fire up Monty.
Again?
He was already captain?
2010, Wales.
Oh, yeah. Fire him up again. Monty's so good. I love Monty.
Yeah, he went up against Corey Pavin.
Captain the 2014 at Bethpage. Let him be like a playing captain.
I thought about that. So, all right, the same question that I asked them. Does Phil play in 2018?
Yes.
2020?
No.
No, you're calling him done at 2018?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm the...
Dude, so, his putting is going to fall off a cliff, I think.
So what you're saying is I think that Phil is going to play in 6 more years of Ryder Cups than you do.
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. We're over an hour now. Let's find one last final question. What's the Impact Golf, what's the best put down or trash talk you've heard after missing a short putt?
This one really got in DJ's head last weekend. Uh-oh. So, I never really watched American Idol, but my brother, this is like one of his favorite things to say, and so I've kind of modified it. It's when that guy Randy, is it Randy, one of the judges?
Randy Jackson?
Yeah, Randy Jackson. He'd be like, I don't know, man. It's a little pitchy for me, dog. Like, I kind of modify that, so I'm like, it was a little twitchy for me, dog. or like, I just kind of go to an Ian Dark, the soccer announcer, and say like, pace, like you know, like if somebody rams it through the brake, pace. So those are kind of my two favorites, just because they kind of make people think. It's like, damn it, man.
That was two good ones.
Start thinking about being twitchy.
I didn't think you'd have two good ones like that. I thought I was putting you on the spot with that question, but that was
you kind of were. It was
you
just,
came
yeah,
through.
I've kind of been, yeah, I've been kind of been trying to up that part of my game. Just playing a little more lately.
Because you whiffed on the first tee, so yeah, definitely work on your trash talk. That's what's going to help you.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on your end?
Last thing, I think going back to the Zurich. What pairing? I thought this was a good question. What pairing would be the one you'd most want to see, and what would be the one that would be most combustible?
So Big Cat and somebody's got to be the one you most want to see, right? I don't know who I would even put in that. I mean, like Tiger Phil would be hilarious, like if they just rubbed that in Hal Sutton's face. I don't know. Are guys going to play this? I feel like everyone that's every big name that is going to play it has already committed to it, right?
Really? I mean, it's kind of in a tough spot on the calendar for sure.
Right. And so, I mean, I still don't think if you're not tied to the sponsor and you're, I mean, like, Adam Scott's not playing this, is he? Or, like, Phil's not playing. I mean, they're not getting any another top 20 player in the world that wasn't planning on playing it just because of the format, I don't think. Do you not agree?
I think there may be one or two more. I mean, well, the thing is, so Zurich has, kind of like going back, Zurich has all those guys on their payroll kind of thing, just like RBC does.
Yeah.
A little bit. I wouldn't mind seeing DJ and DeChambeau play together.
That would be fascinating.
I think that would be extra fascinating.
Please mic them up.
Especially if they're playing like an alternate shot or something like that.
You have to mic those two up. That would be fascinating conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think that would be the best pairing you could possibly have.
Yeah, that's better than my big cat, and I didn't even pick somebody to pair him with. So my brain's fried. It's 11:30 over here. It's nighttime.
Yeah,
man. I'm done.
I'll let you go, man.
I'm toast. So Tron, thanks for jumping on, man. This might be the end of the No Laying Up podcast for the year. I'm going to be gone for 22 days in Africa, so chance I might record one in the end of this week, and then we'll probably post it next week, but I don't know if that's going to come through.
Get like George Coetzee or Brendan De Jong or somebody.
South African.
Yeah.
Gary Player.
Vandervault or whoever, you know, one of those guys.
Gary Player, open invitation to come on the podcast, man.
Richard Sterney.
Are there any good Namibian golfers?
I'll work on that for you.
Okay, work on that for me. But if this is the end of the year, thank you everyone for partaking in an awesome year with the podcast. Hopefully we get one more, but if not, we'll be back in January. In the meantime, should have led with this, but Trap Draw Podcast, the other podcast of our No Laying Up network that Tron and Randy host. Do you guys have anything on tap for that in the near future?
Yeah, we got a couple upcoming. We're going to try to knock out three.
Nice.
Before the first of the year here.
That's so. All right, there it is. That's how you bridge the gap into the new year. Check out the Trap Draw Podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes on the website, and we'll go from there.
Cool.
All right, Tron, thanks for the time, buddy. Talk to you
soon. Club. See the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most! Expect